Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Next weekend is the unofficial start to the summer season for the Cape Coast and Islands. In years past, this meant traffic backups at the bridges, full parking lots at beaches, and town main streets filled with tourists and summer residents. But this year is like no other. With coronavirus sweeping the globe, the United States has the dubious distinction of having the highest number of cases and fatalities worldwide. And within the U.S., Massachusetts is one of the hardest hit states. Statistics show 87,000 cases of coronavirus and nearly 5,900 deaths in the Commonwealth. Only Illinois, New Jersey, and New York have more coronavirus cases and fatalities than Massachusetts. The good news is our efforts to slow the spread of the virus over the past months is working. In Massachusetts, the number of people hospitalized with the virus is decreasing, testing capacity is increasing, and contact tracing teams are in place. Because of this, Governor Baker released the state's four-phase reopening plan yesterday. Now that we have more details about this phased reopening, we invited members of the Cape Cod Reopening Task Force to join us to discuss how that plan will be implemented in our region. And they are State Senator for the Cape and Islands, Julian Sear, Michael Loff, President and CEO of Cape Cod Healthcare, Wendy Northcross, CEO of the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce, and Sean O'Brien, Barnstable County Emergency Preparedness Coordinator. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Wendy, tell us more about the role of the Cape Cod Reopening Task Force and how your work is different from the State Reopening Task Force.
We created a task force back in early April at the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce, Mindy, and then it became really obvious to us that we had to expand it to include our municipal leaders, our county leadership, our healthcare system, and also our Cape and Islands delegation to Beacon Hill. Really, our focus is threefold, to gather best practices for businesses so they can understand what's going to be asked of them to reopen, which includes cleaning protocols, personal hygiene, social distancing, that kind of thing, to find best practices that have worked elsewhere within industry sectors. Also to try to give guidance to our communities. How can we try to have some similarity throughout the region so that it's not a mishmash of wear a mask here, don't wear a mask there, kind of a thing. This beach is open, that beach isn't open. Try to create some coordination amongst the region. And then to really work on a communication strategy so that signage looks familiar as guests or residents or you know, customers go from place to place and they see something, they recognize a safety standard. All of that's really important. Finally, I will say the task force was instrumental in feeding valuable information up the line to the governor's advisory board, especially on issues relative to seasonal economic opportunity for a lot of our locally owned and operated businesses as we go into high season. So it was very, very critical, but the work is not done.
Yeah. There's a significant increase in population each summer from returning seasonal residents and visitors. Sean, will people coming still need to quarantine for 14 days?
I think we're still waiting for a decision on that from the governor. My understanding is then why come down, why travel? So I think what we're going to see, Mindy, is just some sort of change, some sort of discussion from the governor's office as to what they're going to do with that 2-week quarantine and maybe change it more to less of an advisory, more of a recommendation.
One of the reasons we've had social distancing is to slow the spread of the virus. When people arrive in our region from other places, there is that possibility that we could see an uptick in the spread of the virus. Mike, how is Cape Cod Healthcare planning for this possibility?
Well, we've been planning for 3 months. I mean, we understand our community. We understand the demographics of it. And we also understand the seasonality of it. And working with our delegation, working with the county, the chamber, and others, we've really focused on a variety of things, mitigation. How do we really explain to people what's the risk factors? How do we make sure that we have the appropriate testing? How do we make sure that we have the appropriate capacity at each of our locations? We have off-site testing. We have tents outside of our ERs to make sure that once it's inside, it's already been mitigated to a large degree with masking and other preventive measures. We want to make sure that we're helping people before they ever show up so that we can treat them exceptionally well when they get here. All of our plans and policies and procedures are in place to not only handle our current population, but the seasonal population as well. We have capacity. We have protocols. We have the necessary PPE. We have our strong clinical workforce, and we have really a strong management focus on making sure that we can reopen safely for everybody.
In the past, to be tested at the drive-through test site, people needed a doctor's order from a Cape Cod Healthcare-affiliated physician. Out-of-state visitors and seasonal residents might not have a primary care physician affiliated with Cape Cod Healthcare. So what is the protocol for them to get tested?
We have lifted the restriction, and by the way, that restriction was only in place due to the scarcity of the supplies surrounding testing. Once we were able to begin to test in-house and get all of our own necessary swabs and media to be able to process the tests, we now have been able to open it up. So now people that have symptomatic, that are symptomatic, that or have been in close proximity to somebody that has been diagnosed with COVID, with a doctor's order, even from out of state or in Boston, can come and get tested now at our sites.
The testing hours at the drive-through site were reduced. Will they be expanded if warranted?
They won't at this time, because what we've seen due to the incredible efforts of the people on the Cape, and I would like to thank our health system and the county and the delegation, we've seen our testing numbers go down and we've seen our infection rates go down. We've gone from testing a high of 150 a day at our sites to now at about 40 to 45 a day. And the positivity rate has gone down greatly as well. So we're going to be here opened, whether it's at the site of the community college or having testing sites on our hospital campuses. We're going to be here to make sure that everybody's tested when they need it.
Sean, the field hospital set up at Joint Base Cape Cod was dismantled. Was there discussion about getting it back up for the busy summer season if needed?
There's been none at this point, Mindy. Basically, it was a decision by the state. It just seemed that it was there for us on Cape Cod and folks in southeastern Mass and the hospital systems in southeastern Mass. But as things started to move forward, and we basically saw that there wasn't the necessity to have it available. Now, that being said, it is a field hospital, and this is something that, if I'm sure, if determined by the governor and the National Guard, is something that could be reestablished. And Mike might have a little bit of extra on that.
Well, I think if you looked at all the models, and whether you looked at the Nebraska models or the Penn models or the Johns Hopkins models, it really showed that Massachusetts, which has been devastated by this virus, really escaped to a large degree all the modeling that was out there. And we on the Cape did exceptionally well when you looked at the original models that called for us to need up to 800 beds. I applaud the governor and the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the delegation for supporting setting up that field hospital, because had we not gotten in front of this very early, we may have seen those surges that were predicted by so many. The fact that we never had to treat a patient there is a huge success. And I think it's a testament to all the hard work that had gone in from the very beginning to testing nursing homes, to getting out there and taking people to the patients rather than the other way around, and all the other preventative measures that I spoke about. So not using the field hospital was a huge success, but we clearly understand how to do it, and the fact that we got it set up and ready in 6 days shows you how nimble we as a community can be.
Hospital volume increases significantly in the summer. Cape Cod Healthcare recently furloughed 600 employees. What happens if we see spikes in coronavirus this summer? Is the hospital prepared? Will we bring those people back? What's the plan?
The fact is, we want people in place to treat patients, and the fact that patients aren't here in so many different areas is indicative of the restrictions that we had to abide by regulation. By the way, it wasn't a subjective act to furlough anybody. The fact is, the business wasn't here. When more patients come, we'll clearly bring our employees back. And by the way, I don't think it was ever noted that we paid everybody in full for 8 weeks. Eight full weeks to make sure our healthcare workers were ready. And the fact is, we beat the models. And no frontline staff has been furloughed, regardless of what you read out there. And yes, OB and pediatrics at Falmouth was shuttered. But the fact is, when our patients come, we're gonna look forward to having our workforce back.
And we hear people are not going to the hospital when they feel ill because they fear that they might be exposed to the virus. So, Matt, how are you getting out the message to residents and visitors about the safety of the hospital and the importance of seeking care?
Well, there's nobody better than infection prevention and control than a hospital, and ours is second to none. Cape Cod Hospital, Falmouth Hospital have incredible success in working with highly infectious patients each and every day, not just with COVID. So we've done public service announcements. We've done advertising. We've really got into social media, doing calls like this, working with our delegation that has also put out public service announcements on our behalf. The chamber has been instrumental. The county has been instrumental. So we want to let people know that, number one, don't ignore your health conditions. Our demographics on the Cape really suggest that so many people have underlying health issues. And we're seeing people come here that ordinarily would have been treated on an outpatient basis, and now they're being admitted in distress. And we want to make sure people know we're safe. We're prepared. We have great protocols in place, and the care that you will receive will be exceptional. There is no one better at preventing infection than a hospital.
Mm. Sean, how is contact tracing being conducted in Barnstable County? Is it by town health departments or community health centers? How is that being conducted?
Most of the contact tracing is being done through the VNA. So in Barnstable County, we have approximately, we have 15 towns. 12 of them use VNA services, so the Cape Cod VNA under Cape Cod Healthcare is doing quite a bit of it, and additionally towns that have their own town nurse. They're also conducting that contact tracing. We do some of it here at Barnstable County, and I think what we're also starting to see is as things move further in, the state group that was set up, the cooperative that the governor's office has set up, they're actually doing some of it as well. And so we've seen a pretty good response when it comes to contact tracing here in the county.
Sean, hurricane season starts next month. Will emergency shelters be able to open with social distancing guidelines in place? And what kinds of modifications do you anticipate that we'll need at shelters?
I think that may be something that we're in the process of working on. It is something that we're in the process of working on with the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency. So we do have staff that are on a committee to address that issue. My guess is, yes, absolutely. We're going to see social distancing within the shelters, and we may be using even more of the building. Instead of just being in that gymnasium, there may be just additional social distancing guidelines taking place throughout the building, should that be the case. And yes, it is hurricane season, and we're already looking at our first named storm that is passing along to the south of us today. So I hopefully that's not an indicator of things to come.
No, let's hope not. Julian, as we mentioned, the governor released that phased reopening plan yesterday. Do towns have the authority to enact stricter or more lenient rules on reopening and social distancing than those that are laid out by the state?
So what we're really aiming to do here is to make sure that we're speaking with one voice. Our aim, right, is twofold, to save lives and livelihoods. Under the governor's plan, sort of the governor setting the rules of the road, and then towns have an enforcing role, right? So businesses essentially have to do an attestation that they've met. They've created a COVID-19 control plan. They've put the relevant precautions and public health processes in place. And then enforcement happens at the local level. In some cases, we have a strong local control here in Massachusetts, and so towns are, technically able to go further. What we're trying to do, though, as a region, is make sure that we do not have a patchwork approach. Along with the rest of the legislative delegation, are meeting with every single select board on Cape Cod this week. Sarah Peake and I did five of them last night. We're really urging our towns to make sure that there's not a go-it-alone approach. I think it's particularly important because the public does not distinguish between our more parochial boundaries, right? They may not see the difference between Truro and Eastham or Yarmouth and Mashpee. It's really crucial, particularly when we're talking about seasonal residents and then ultimately visitors, that the public health precautions and the rules of the road need to be consistent, because we need to have broad adherence to them. If you have a patchwork of different rules, different criteria, it's going to be very confusing for folks. And
Chaos. Sean O'Brien, Barnstable County Emergency Preparedness Coordinator, and Michael Luff, President and CEO of Cape Cod Healthcare. I know you both have to run. Thanks so much for taking some time to be with us this morning.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. We're talking about the phased reopening of the Cape. If you have questions or comments, you can join the conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. Governor Baker released the Commonwealth's four-phase reopening plan yesterday. Now we have more details about this phased reopening. We invited members of the Cape Cod Reopening Task Force to join us to discuss how that plan will be implemented in our region. And with us is State Senator for the Cape and Islands, Julian Sear, and Wendy Northcross, CEO of the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce. We'd also like to hear from you. If you have questions or comments about the reopening, you can join the conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626, or send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Wendy, Julian was talking about speaking with one voice, and I'm wondering how we're letting seasonal residents and visitors know about the state, the regional COVID-19 guidelines.
We have actually created some joint statements, Mindy. We have worked with the islands through the great leadership of our Cape and Islands delegation, and primarily Senator Sear. We've reached out to the islands, both their hospitals, their chambers of commerce, who are also the regional tourism councils for our places. And we've crafted a joint statement that says, here's the state guidance at the moment. Here's the travel advisory. This is what you need to know. And we are prepared to update that as things change. So, of course, major changes were introduced yesterday. Well, major in some ways and in some ways not, but we'll be tweaking that messaging and keeping that published on our chamber website. For example, last year we had over 1.7 million people come to our website, unique visits, looking for information about coming to Cape Cod. So we have great channels of communication if you add all of our other social media channels on top of that. But because of the islands, you know, have unique instances, and because the Outer Cape is a national park versus the Upper Cape, which is more populated, there are geographic nuances. But it can be confusing to someone from away, and we want to make sure we're stitched as closely together with good, factual, well-vetted information so people can plan and people can feel safe.
Let's talk to Steve, who's giving us a call from Chatham. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Thank you, Mindy. Steve Buckley from Chatham. I have a question relating to the role that the Cape Cod Task Force plays. I fully understand the need for some unified approach, as so people aren't confused, even people who are already living on the Cape, not only mm-hmm. the people who are coming, but they're doesn't seem to be any legal authorization or authority for the task force from what I've read. Wendy just said a minute ago that it started out at the Chamber of Commerce, whereas it seems that it should be a county government effort that the chamber and others join, not the other way around.
And that's what so, I'm Steve, is your question about enforcement then? Is that what your question is?
I'm just wondering, I know the senator mentioned the word coordination, that the task force is going to be coordinating, but it has no legal authority to do that.
All right, let's...
I can answer that question. Yeah. So the task force really is a collaborative effort to get all the various entities and authorities sort of in a room and working, you know, working together and pulling in the same direction. There is no, and this is actually a result because there isn't a mayor of Cape Cod or sort of a single authority in the region. Even if you look at Barnstable County, which I think has been really part of the reason why we've seen some success here as a region that Mike Locke was talking about, you know, we're used to collaborating as a region. We have county government, but the county actually doesn't have much authority to sort of enforce various health protocols. Those really fall to local boards of health. So basically, in the absence of having sort of a single sole authority right across the region, we've got 23 towns, we have three different counties, we have different chambers, we have different legislators. The aim is really basically to get everyone in the room so that we're communicating and coordinating, and then using the existing authority that we have primarily through local municipalities, the county, and then I guess whatever authority that your elected officials have. And so it's not, we're not a rulemaking body. Most of the rules of the road here are being set by Governor Baker. What we're trying to do is to be an organ of communication, of coordination, in part because there isn't one central authority here as a region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, Wendy, as you mentioned earlier, also the other way around, to be able to funnel information to the governor's office to help in those decisions, right?
Exactly. So we were able to get an audience with the advisory board and make a presentation along with our counterparts in the Berkshires on the nuances of a seasonal economy where businesses in some cases have only 15 weeks to earn enough revenue to last them for 52 weeks. And we were able to demonstrate the overdependency, I guess you can say, on travel and tourism related businesses in both regions. And the fact that in some ways it was fortunate that we had this horrific virus to deal with while most of our businesses were closed. But we need, if they don't reopen and aren't allowed to reopen, there was going to be much more massive business closure and failure than could have been predicted. So we were able to get in front of the advisory board, talk about that criticality, talk about we have the highest unemployment rates in the state, in the Berkshires and the Cape, and we have the best health numbers in the state. So we've done the right thing here. We've made a pitch for, can there be regional nuances? If Boston has one set of problems, does the whole state have to, you know, toe the line because of a particular hotspot? Not picking on anybody, just trying to come up with the fiscal realities. And we were able to get that audience, and it landed me a seat on this subgroup that's now talking about how to get our tourism-related businesses open before phase two, but to do it safely and to do it with care so that there is consumer confidence. Without consumer confidence, we have no prayer of business success.
Yeah. Steve, thanks for the phone call. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Gail is calling from Falmouth. Hi, Gail.
Good morning, Mindy. I would like to request some clarity. Perhaps I didn't hear clearly enough regarding and also regarding the best numbers, but I think that's related to how much testing we've really done mm-hmm. for data. So my question is it accurate that no, it is not necessary to have a doctor's order out of state or in state to go to one of these testing sites?
I believe he said need a doctor's order, yes.
That's what Mike said, that that occurred, that doctor's order was during the height of when we were going through the rise of cases being indicated, because they were short of supplies. That's not the case anymore. Anyone can get tested. Correct.
It is not necessary because
healthcare can manage.
Okay. Gail, thank you for the phone call. Fritz is calling from Kootuat. Hi, Fritz. Fritz, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Fritz.
My question is regarding weekly rentals. Has any recommendations have been made for that? Because it seems to be a very short turnaround time on weekly rentals, you know, from, 10 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon. That doesn't seem to be enough time to clean out a house for potential contamination.
Yeah. So, Fritz, the leisure accommodations are set to reopen in phase two with certain restrictions and guidelines that are being developed. So we're currently in phase one, and each phase will last no less than 3 weeks, and it may be more. So we're talking about, the middle of June is sort of the soonest time that leisure accommodations will be allowed. But all those sort of questions you are raising, right, in the short-term rental space, you know, how do you do the cleaning that could be necessary in such a short turnaround time? All those are questions that the subgroup around restaurants and tourism that Wendy's a part of is trying to grapple with. So right now, as long as we're in phase one, leisure accommodations, continue to not be allowed. And then in phase two is when we'll begin to look at that. I know there's it's not sort of the clarity that folks are wanting. I think folks would love to say, you know, this is a date certain. But I think the governor has been very clear, and I really agree with him here, that they are having this process be led by the public health surveillance, and that, you know, this is going to be a bit of a moving target as we see how, you know, how the pandemic continues to manifest in Massachusetts. But for these purposes, mid-June is sort of the earliest that that would happen.
Right, but what are you going to tell people how to behave in mid-June?
So that's what they're working out. There are
cleaning protocols that are being that have been recommended by. I mean, this is a very sophisticated industry, the short-term rental market, and the majority of the rentals, believe it or not, are done by professional property managers, and they do not want to jeopardize their business model. So they have done extensive research and are looking at cleaning protocols that they've recommended up the line. Some of it could be, you know, it hasn't been decided yet, I guess is what the senator is emphasizing. It hasn't been decided yet, but when it is decided, the tantamount touchdown here is public safety. So public safety and cleaning, even though the state may say one thing, you will find property managers that are going to err on the side of safety and put perhaps put buffers in between their weekly rentals, or they will put extraordinary cleaning services to press in 10 hours. So it's going to be up to the individual business. Like I keep saying, if the customer doesn't trust your business model and your cleaning protocol, your business will suffer. So that's why we're working at best practices. What actually is the technique that is needed to clean, to disinfect, to keep your people safe?
Yeah. Fritz, thanks for the phone call. Christina sent an email, and she's referencing a New York Times at Home article that excerpts starts with a Hamptons homeowner expressing concern that renters won't leave her home. Then it refers to New York State's recent moratorium on evictions that is currently in effect until June 20th and applies to short-term rentals. And so her question is, are there comparable regulations in effect here in Massachusetts? Is there a moratorium on evictions that applies to short-term rentals? Julian, do you know the answer to that?
So there is not. So there is a moratorium on evictions. There's actually a whole package as well that we passed around mortgage forbearance and trying to help out both those who rent and landlords. But the rental law basically applies for sort of any rental that's greater than a month, right? So greater than 31 days. And so it's silent on short-term rentals. My office actually got an inquiry about this, and we were checking with some agencies. You know, from my perspective, I'm sort of less, you know, I think if you're someone who's capable to put up the sizable amount of money it is to rent a place for a week or a month or whatever, you know, that may be sort of less of a risk than say someone who can't kind of come up with rent because of the economic hardship we have here. But the eviction prohibitions apply to traditional rentals. It's silent on short-term rentals.
All right. Thank you. Jennifer is calling from Eastham. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. So I think my question kind of piggybacks on that about short-term rentals. Could someone remind me what the guidelines are, say, renting a week or a month now, and then will we just stay tuned to see if that changes as of, say, June 15th?
So leisure accommodations are not allowed in phase one and have not been allowed. And so a leisure accommodation is essentially anything that's under 31 days. So anything that's sort of basically a rental that's greater than a month or greater is not applicable there. What we expect in phase two is when we've been told that leisure accommodations will be able to reopen with restrictions. We're sort of unclear what sort of the protocols restrictions there are going to be. The other kind of piece that we've got to figure out is under the governor's travel advisory, travelers from out of state, if they come here, are advised, they're urged to do a 14-day quarantine. So we're trying to get some clarity about what that means as it relates to leisure accommodations, because not everyone comes here for a full 2 weeks. And so that's what we're working hard to get some answers on. I'm really encouraged that we've got this working group that Wendy's a member of to really kind of sink our teeth into tourism-related issues. I will note earlier we were talking about feedback that has gone up to the administration and the governor. And it was actually Cape Cod that had the most feedback that went to the governor's reopening advisory board. So more than Boston, more than anywhere else in the state, we had the most feedback. So I think we're being heard, but it's a matter of sort of working through those various issues and getting very clear, specific guidelines in the leisure accommodation space, which includes short-term rentals.
Jennifer, thanks for that question.
The Cape Cod Chamber website will be updated? Because right now it says you can rent to essential workers.
You can rent to essential workers. I left that out.
Yeah. Okay, Jennifer, thanks for the question. Yep. Beaches are one of the biggest draws for our region, and the good news is the beaches are open. According to state guidelines for safe reopening beaching, people must wear masks when within 6 feet of one another. Groups on the beach must be set up 12 feet apart from other groups. We don't have to wear masks while swimming. Wendy, how is the Cape Cod Reopening Task Force taking these state guidelines and figuring out how to implement them locally?
Well, we actually have a subgroup in our Cape Cod Reopening Task Force that's just talking about those beaches. So we were fortunate to have Mark Ells, town manager of Barnstable, and Brian Carlstrom, superintendent of the Cape Cod National Seashore, working with us on protocols. They had also been advising the governor's advisory board. So we have, of course, most of our beaches are either federally controlled or by the towns. We have two DCR controlled beaches, which the state owns and operates. But we're, again, trying to create some uniformity around what we know works for our beaches. An arbitrary parking limit is not necessarily going to restrict people from being on the beach. So what are these other mechanisms that we can do? The beaches, fortunately, because being outdoors is good for people. Being outdoors is not only helping your psychological health, but your physical health. So the beaches have been open, quote unquote, right along. We're just now going to have to align with state guidelines, again, to reduce confusion so that people can honor the request here, which is pretty much social distancing and good personal hygiene when you're outside. And I think we can do that. We can do that easily. I also expect, Mindy, that we are not going to have the same numbers of people come to Cape Cod that we've had in years mm-hmm. past. I mean, there's just a muted, as the senator says, we're going to have a muted summer. And it's going to be dependent on a lot of things. Are they employed? If they are employed, do they feel comfortable taking time off because they've been at home this long? They might come earlier than normal because the kids are out of school. Kids are usually the indicator of when summer really breaks open. They're not tethered to a school building anymore. They're tethered to their parents. Will the parents come earlier in June? All kinds of variables that we've never really had to factor in for our tourism season before. So I think we're opening this in a very smart way as we're dialing up the dial, not flipping the switch, and people can get accustomed to what's going to be expected of them, including good protocols at the beach, good beach etiquette, that we hope to have some signage that's right. Julie, we're going to have signage at the beaches that say, hey, welcome, but this is what you need to do.
Exactly. Uniform information.
So enforcement of the beach guidelines can be tough, though. Julian, are there guidelines that are enforceable by law? And how are you guiding towns on determining how enforcement will work?
So enforcement on all beaches and anything else falls related to three entities, under the local Board of Health Authority, which is quite broad, and then the Department of Public Health and then the Division of Labor Standards in the case of workspaces. And so, you know, that's where I think this, you know, this risk communication is really key. You know, our municipalities don't have the assets, and nor do we want to be sort of, you know, patrolling beaches or sort of any spaces, you know, making sure that people are, you know, sort of adhering to every single piece of these guidelines. I think what's most important, and if you looked at the governor's press conference yesterday, the first thing he talked about was personal responsibility. And the only way this is going to work is if people, you know, follow those, you know, those four aspects of personal responsibility that we're always talking about: covering your face and mouth, washing your hands and washing surfaces often, keeping your distance, and staying vigilant for symptoms and staying home if you're sick. So, you know, the municipalities do have the ability to enforce, but I think that we're trying to first have broad adherence
by the public, that's going to be the most effective way to making sure folks are doing this. If there are problems, I'm sure that, you know, municipal entities are going to have to step in, but hopefully we don't get there, and we really need people to take personal responsibility, take these precautions seriously, and adhere to them.
You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about the phased reopening of Cape Cod. We've invited members of the Cape Cod Reopening Task Force to join us. With us is State Senator for the Cape and Islands, Julian Sear, and Wendy Northcross, CEO of the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Kara from Barnstable writes, how will it work with supermarkets still operating at 40% capacity and restaurants severely limited for meeting the food needs of the Cape as the population expands? Will there be a public education campaign asking people to bring what they need for their trip?
So actually, in the guidance to seasonal residents that's currently out there, and then what will also be updated later this week, is actually guidance to people who are coming here, particularly if they need to adhere to, if they're following a quarantine, either to bring your supplies with you or then use the contactless delivery system or contactless pickup, which is something that a lot of local entities have done. So that guidance is out there. We do expect that the occupancy numbers of certain establishments will sort of, you know, those limits will continue. I expect they'll be sort of gradually lifted through the phasing.
Mm-hmm. Mindy, don't forget, too, that the grocery stores have been highly impacted because we just don't get to go out to eat as much as we used to. So There's been this massive shift over to the grocery stores. And as restaurants come back online, you're going to see that's going to be easing a little bit. We have been talking to the grocery stores and the restaurants about their supply chain, just based on those very issues. What is our capacity?
Yeah. Bob writes, how do these relaxations apply to people over 65? Pretty much the same for all of us, right? Everybody's asking.
Yeah.
Being asked.
Yep.
To do the same
thing. It's uniform. We do hope that, you know, supermarkets, for instance, have, established certain hours for older folks. And, you know, those are sort of initiatives, I think, are, you know, I hope for are things that continue at least through phase one. I hear a lot of folks are really anxious about, you know, their potential risk and exposure. And I think those sort of precautions make good sense.
Meredith writes, my daughter is an adult with disabilities who's been sheltering at home with me in Falmouth since the end of March. Normally, she lives independently in Plymouth with support services from a nonprofit program that we pay for annually. They are requiring all participants to have a negative COVID-19 test before they will provide these services and permit social distancing activities. Yesterday, I called the Falmouth drive-through test center, but was told that our daughter does not qualify for testing since she has no symptoms and has been sheltering in place and has not been in contact with anyone infected. Perhaps since Falmouth's testing center has excess capacity at this time, they could expand testing to individuals in this situation. That's a good point. If you know, this, her services depend on testing. Julian, are you hearing from other families that are having these problems?
Yes, we've heard not only from families, but, you know, I heard from a health food store, you know, that was looking to get their, you know, employees tested before they reopen. I would encourage folks who are running into these sort of issues, this is a good, you know, opportunity. Reach out to my office or anyone else in the legislative delegation, and we can help navigate that. We also have a working group in the Senate that's looking at a number of issues, but particularly vulnerable populations. And so I'll raise that as an issue that we need some clarity. The state needs to have some clarity, particularly for folks in congregate housing who need a negative test to continue getting services.
Yep. Richard is giving us a call from Oak Bluffs. Good morning, Richard.
Hey, good morning. I just have an observation and then a question. I live in the Vineyards, and I noticed at the local beach here a number of people acting pretty much like there was no social distancing. They weren't wearing anything on their, no face cloths, whatever. And so my question is, how do you take into account, you suggest rules, but if, how do you take into account the fact that many people are not going to adhere to those rules? How is that calibrated? How do you deal with that?
So this is why the personal responsibility piece is so crucial. And if folks aren't adhering to these, we're going to see this play out in the health data. And that's going to determine how quickly we're able to reopen. So what I would say to the people who, you know, are not adhering to these guidelines, one, you know, you're not in compliance, but also, too, not only are you putting yourself, your family, and others at risk, but you're putting the ability for our economy to come back online, you know, at risk. And so, you know, a part of this is really uniform, consistent public information. Some people may not know what the rules of the road are yet, and so that's what we're aiming to do, is sort of get out that uniform information, right? Having that consistent poster at every beach and information at every website about how you use the beaches. But the other part of this is, if people aren't adhering to it, then we're going to see a continuation of cases, and that's going to prevent us from reopening sooner.
Yeah. Maybe we should touch on the friction, too, that we're seeing between your own residents and visitors and second homeowners. You know, we see a lot of nasty comments on Facebook and even some confrontations in person. This is, Julian, you think a minority, a vocal minority here? What most people, do you think, are trying to follow the rules? Or what do you think is happening?
So I think that most people, whoever they are broadly following the rules, because the data is showing that. So we were really concerned about, you know, in mid-February, there was mid-March, when the first occurring, we were really concerned about a population influx from a health perspective. We were concerned about community spread. And people did come here starting in mid-March, to ride this out. But we did not see community spread because of that population influx. And so I think, to me, that shows that people were following the rules, people were taking a lot of personal responsibility, and the health data shows that. And so that should alleviate some concern and some friction. It's going to become more and more challenging as we're looking at a more significant population influx, particularly with seasonal residents and seasonal workers, and then ultimately visitors. There is that friction, but my sense is it's more sort of on the margins on both sides.
Mindy,
do you agree?
I do, and I think that it's been a question that we've had, of course, and I've been assured, actually, when I was asked, where do most of our visitors come from, and I explained Boston, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, the response was from the medical professionals and the public health professionals, like, you know, those populations are very attuned to what needs to be done to stay safe. They're used to wearing masks. They're used to the social distancing. They're used to being at home and how to stay safe. So it's not like we have to translate this very foreign pattern of existence to someone that just, you know, popped in from, I don't know, who doesn't have COVID at the moment? Antarctica? I don't know.
Right.
But it was, and they probably are coming with having had some immunity already, so that we're actually almost safer having our visitors come from our core markets. My expectation, quite honestly, is this year it'll be primarily a Massachusetts resident that's taking a quick getaway, unless they have this long-term reservation, and we hope they stick with those reservations. We can keep people safe. If you do the simple things, this virus falls apart in water. Wash your hands, wear a mask, social distance. We can manage this.
Mm-hmm. We have an email question. Can you explain safer at home versus the stay at home order?
It's more of a suggestion now than a
mandate,
right? Yeah. It's more of a suggestion than a mandate. I mean, that's a good answer to the person about the over 65. You're safer at home, but you don't have to stay in your house. You're smart.
The J-1 visa students won't be coming to help in the service industry this season. I'm assuming that's the same with the H-2B visa workers, Wendy. So will businesses have the workers that they need?
You know, I have not heard any cry of need. I've heard concern for their H-2B workers. I've heard concern for the J-1 students that come every year and hope that they're okay in their own countries and their own economic well-being. But we have really high unemployment. There's a lot of dislocated workers at the moment who may be encouraged to go back to work for a really great employer. You know, I don't, that coupled with, we probably won't have the same numbers of people coming here. So the volume will be different, or their volume will be constrained by capacity restrictions. So I think that most of the businesses that I've talked to have said that they think they can manage it. And then there are some nuances around the PPP program that, you know, we could talk about, but that's like a whole nother show.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, Wendy, what are you hearing from seasonal restaurants and bars? I know there was one in Provincetown who just said, you know what, we're not going to open for the season. Are you finding others that are saying that, or is everybody who's seasonal pretty much planning on opening?
You know, there's a lot of anxiety at the moment. They're just looking for a date certain. And as, you know, the senator has said, that we're still finalizing those protocols so that we can give them a date certain. Some have said if we find that we can't open until 4th of July, it may just not be worth my while to go through all the expense of retooling and buying more tables to do outdoor dining, doing extensive pre-cleaning, trying to find staff from alternative sources. It just may not be worth it for me to do it this summer. On the other hand, there have been businesses say, I just don't have enough in reserves. I don't have a line of credit. If I can't open by X date, I can't be open. So it's across the gamut.
Yeah. Anne writes, I was wondering, would people need to wear masks during church services in addition to social distancing? This is a bit tricky with congregational participation. It is tricky.
Yeah, I believe those are required under the places of worship are allowed to open under phase one. But masks are required. I think people who are outside of their immediate family units sort of can't sit right next to each other. So would advise the writer to look at the governor's website for specific information on places of worship.
Yeah, they're sort of encouraging outdoor services.
Yeah. You sort of touched on this, Julie, and this challenge of working in an environment of fear and anxiety and this parochial nature that we reside in. So just kind of in the last couple minutes that we have, maybe some thoughts going forward of you know, remembering we will get through this, but this is a tough time for a lot of people, and this fear and anxiety is probably going to increase a little bit in the coming months.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tremendously difficult time, you know, for all of us, but particularly when you make your life, you know, in a seasonal place like Cape Cod or the islands, you know, you, for so many of us, and my family was in this situation for decades, you know, you make your livelihood in a few sort of short 8-week, 12-week season, you know, and even in a best case scenario, we're going to have a muted summer. And so that is just tremendously challenging. I think we need to first and foremost recognize that, you know, as Cape Codders and Islanders, we're in the hospitality business. You know, we want to be able to welcome people when we can, when it's safe to do so. I think that we have a lot of strength as a region. We're used to all working together. You know, not all parts of the Commonwealth have a task force like this, where you basically have all the key stakeholders at the same table. I think that our ability to work together has been an asset, but it's going to be a real challenge to get information out in a consistent way and make sure that there's personal responsibility that people are doing. And I would just say, you know, these are what the rules of the road are. These are what the advisories are. And we need everyone to be following them as best they can, because that's going to ensure our public safety. That's going to keep further spread of coronavirus in our region down. And it's also going to allow us to reopen sooner. So I think there's definitely some bright spots and definitely some promise, but
right,
this will remain a profoundly challenging, difficult moment for us, really, until we have a vaccine.
All right, we're going to wrap it there. We'll post links with more information about the phased reopening of Massachusetts and the Cape at our website, capeandislands.org. State Senator for the Cape and Islands, Julian Sear, and Wendy Northcross, CEO of the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Mindy.
Thanks, Mindy. Stay well.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.